Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Strantz. Big day here on the show, breaking down the Jim Rutherford extension. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com.
So small things are like, congratulations to Jim Rutherford.
Mm-hmm.
Good to see the team nail this in terms of timing mm-hmm. and alignment, right? And on and on. But I still think in terms of what we're going to be talking about and thinking about and where this club's going, not just over the next 7 weeks ahead of the trade deadline, but over the next several months, we know this team's now all in. Like, no question about it.
Here's how I would frame it. They're going to try to go all in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because okay. That's, to me, and you know I've been on this for a long time, right? That this could be a year, and now I'm saying is a year, that's worth going all in on. There still has to be the right player out there. You can't conjure right. the player out of thin air to go and acquire, right?
They're sitting on a nice stack of chips, and they've got, you know, queen, king, yep. on suit. Not necessarily the nut cards, and it'll depend what they see at the flop, but they're willing to be aggressive and go all in.
Now, I will say, and you know, we're going to try to get Justin Cuthbert on the line here momentarily from the Fan 590, but Elliot Friedman on the Jeff Merrick show today, and he framed this as not necessarily reporting, but kind of, I think he said he was using circumstantial evidence to link the Canucks and Elias Lindholm, and he just basically said, look, they've done a deal, so there's some comfort there. He fits, and you know, with Jim Rutherford and his MO, he basically said, I have a really hard time imagining that they wouldn't call and say, hey, what's going on with Elias Lindholm? What are you thinking?
Well, also, if you want a center, there's no other
That's
top
it.
Of the lineup. Like
that, if you want a stud center, top of the lineup, top six, no doubt about it, center, that's your guy right now.
Lindholm's basically righty Horvat. You know, like righty Horvat, not as good in the circle, not as big, but a little bit more skilled, right? But like fundamentally a comparable player. And yeah, I mean, this club could still use that, right? I mean, that's they needed to monetize some of their center depth to improve their defense. But when you looked through, you know, this team's most likely playoff opponents, it's like, if Dreisaitl and McDavid are split when the Canucks play the Oilers, are you really you really comfortable with a Dreisaitl Pugh Suter head to head? You know, Deneau, Dubois, Kopitar against the Kings, right? Stevenson, Carlson, Eichel, assuming he's healthy, against the Golden Knights. I mean, your most likely opponents have just an embarrassment of center depth. You need more, no question. And who else is probable to shake loose outside of Lindholm?
Yeah, I know, like, I don't see it with Sean Monahan. He's just not that tier of player,
no,
obviously.
No.
You know, Adam Henrique, to me, is a consolation prize.
Love
good
Adam
player,
Henrique.
But it's obviously a different tier of player.
Adding Henrique is more like adding Antoine Vermette mm-hmm. for the Chicago Blackhawks in, what was it, 2014? Something like that? 2013, 2014? As opposed to adding Doug Weight the way that, you know, I feel like Rutherford... That's the sort of deal where I could see Rutherford really spending, right? Is like if he can add a player that he thinks can have that type of impact. I think if you're talking about Henrique, it's, you know, whatever. It's not, that's not all in.
I think it's worth doing, but yeah, it's not a big swing.
Now, did you see the Owen Tippett goal last night?
Yes, I did.
Because I was thinking about this. I was actually thinking about this because Jason Brough, morning show host on Sportsnet 650, noted, like, when was the last time a team made this sort of leap? Why are you laughing at me?
I just love it. I wonder what percentage of our listeners don't know who Jason Brough is. Morning show host on Sportsnet 650. The most general way you could possibly caption it.
John Hamm, morning show star.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, he was noting, like, when was the last time we saw a team make this type of improvement? You know, without it being like a young team leveling up, like without it being a New Jersey Devils type situation where you've amassed just a ton of elite talent and then it finally congeals. And here's my answer. Here's my best answer from recent history. It's my former employer. In the last year of Dale Tallon's regime. Now, these seasons, I'm going to use point percentage here, and I want everyone to note it's not because I'm being obtuse.
We do have our guest on the line, so.
Just let me quickly make the point, and then I'll ask
All
Cuthbert
right.
about it. Both of these seasons were shortened by the pandemic, but the Panthers basically improved in Bill Zito's first year from like a 5 .5 point percentage team, which is, you know, fringe playoffs, to a 700 plus, which is President's Trophy winning pace. Seasons were 69 and 56 games long, respectively, so the point totals aren't as impressive. But I think it's the same thing, where you find a way to support a high-end core group a lot better under new management, and all of a sudden things come together quickly. That team that year went all in, Ben Chiarot for a first, and here's the tough one. Owen Tippett.
Claude Giroux. Yeah.
Owen Tippett for Claude Giroux. Did you see that Owen Tippett goal? Let's bring Cuthbert in.
All right.
Cuthbert, did you see that Owen Tippett goal?
I did. It was lovely, wasn't it?
Wouldn't it be sick to watch him play with Sasha Barkov?
Yeah, I mean, I can't deny that. Maybe it was a bit of a slow burn for him. Yeah, he's certainly a little bit more valuable these days than Claude Giroux. And I guess we know where Claude Giroux went. Like I see your point. Like, hindsight is 2020, and I don't know if that was the greatest deal ever. And I get that a market like Florida would get pretty excited about this position that they were in. And they've survived this, clearly. But that looks like a pretty impressive player, and that was a hell of a goal.
Jamie will vouch for me. I killed that deal the day it happened.
What? You did. That's true. Yeah, you were not a fan of the Claude Giroux or the Ben Chiarot deal,
no,
for that matter.
Hated both.
It is our guest, Justin Cuthbert from Fan 590 in Toronto. And, of course, Leafs Canucks tomorrow, and that's always a highlight of the schedule here in Vancouver. But, you know, preempting that a little bit for us, Jim Rutherford signs a 3-year extension to remain president of hockey ops for the Canucks. What's your reaction? I mean, we were just discussing it. It's so rare to see a team with this profile have this kind of dramatic turnaround from afar. What's your reaction to, you know, not just this season, but what Jim Rutherford has done in this role so far?
Yeah, it's not overly surprising given how great this Canucks season has been. But, like, you guys know way more than I do. I mean, it was messy getting to this season, right? It was really, really messy. The Rutherford regime was not exactly smooth sailing, and it was like louder than it really needed to be in certain factions, but it just didn't feel like he was having the same effect or the desired effect or what we learned to grow accustomed to when it came to Jim Rutherford. But once the pieces were slotted, I suppose, the way he wanted to, I mean, or with the way he wanted them, I mean, this is dramatically turned around. And for that reason, like, I see some value and some reason in extending this partnership, because if this is what he wanted all along, although the path getting here was a little bumpy, this looks pretty good right now. And it looks good with Rick Tocchet. And I'm sure this is kind of what they were preparing for. Just it's kind of a mess getting there.
It's kind of remarkable because, you know, we talk so much about culture and sports and at the player level, but also at the organization level. And I do wonder if we're going to end up looking back at this as kind of a textbook example of what happens when you have the right person in charge at the top of the organization, and how that kind of trickles down, not just to the other executives, to the coaches, but all the way through the organization. And all of a sudden you can get dramatically different results without changing the player personnel all that much, because just things are so different in the organization top to bottom.
Yeah, and I do think there were changes, though. Obviously, you guys, again, know way more than I do in terms of the nitty-gritty and the details here. But this is a guy who, you know, sort of built his legend, at least with Pittsburgh, on being able to make those small moves, being able to make small changes to change the entire ecosystem. And it felt like there were attempts of that, failed attempts of that, for a while. But I think, you know, maybe if we're doing the trickle-down, sort of that middle area was what was last addressed, or what was needed to be addressed in order for this to all work, because he did make some moves and some of these moves didn't work. And then all of a sudden, once the whole vision was clear, it did come together and the moves made more sense. The moves had more of a profound impact. So I personally lost a lot of confidence in Jim Rutherford seeing, you know, the first years and the first steps taken with the organization seem so clumsy. But now this is more of what we're accustomed to, with one idea, everyone on board, everyone rowing in the same direction. It just started to make sense, and now it makes sense to further this partnership some more.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because in some ways, you know, when I reflect on my evaluation of this team, and I'll have to do some serious reflecting on what I got wrong here, you know, I do wonder if I overfitted the dysfunction of last year onto some of the hockey moves. Like, to what extent does that confidence shape, do you think, the conversations we have about some of these top execs around the league?
I mean, I think there is like a distinction we have to make, and maybe that's something, as you mentioned, you got to do some reflecting. We got to be careful about, and there are a lot of different factors, right? Like Jim Rutherford's, you know, an older guy who was like, is this like the last stop here? And is he able to handle like everything that goes into running a hockey team the way you need to? I mean, we just saw Masai Ujiri speak yesterday, and he speaks like he should be running a Fortune 500 company, and he kind of is at the same time, but like he speaks with such confidence in his ability to bring people together. And maybe that's just not like a Jim Rutherford strong suit, and the things that he was really struggling with was managing people or whatever you want to call it, and just dealing with the personnel issues that was going on. That was just not something he was equipped to do as cleanly as you like. But if you separate that from hockey decisions and you maybe see what he was intending to do before he was able to put all the pieces together, maybe it makes more sense. And this is a hockey person who was doing a hockey job, and we probably should have been focusing more on that. Like, I think there's a lot that goes into running a team,
yeah,
obviously. And there are different factors that play into being a brilliant executive. But when it just comes down to the sport, when it just comes down to the product on the ice, some people are just geared to do that one thing. And I don't know if this is a fair evaluation completely, but I do feel like he struggled with dealing with rocky waters. But when it comes to, hey, once we get this boat settled in the right direction, once we have the ability to, you know, to take the path that we desired, it was a lot cleaner, right? And not everyone can be expected to be brilliant at all things when it comes to this job. But again, if we're talking hockey, the hockey looks really good right now.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, like, I never bought the, like, Rutherford did like an hour-long press conference of almost exactly 12 months ago and like was taking punches and throwing them back. You know, the stamina, like the executive stamina side, the presentation from him, you know, I always bought that part of it. It was sort of more that I wasn't sure if he could help this organization get out of its own way in terms of the distractions. Anyway, in terms of like, where are you in terms of how this team should be viewed? Should this team be viewed as a legit contender at this point?
And just one more point on that. I think the one thing that from a real outsider's perspective was, okay, autonomy, right? It's like, yeah,
right.
Rutherford was making all those decisions for those Pittsburgh teams, and he was able to make that, you know, move for the third liner that really kind of changed the dynamic. But if he's not able to make every decision, and again, we don't really know the extent of all that, how can he do his job to his best ability? How can he relay a message to his best ability? I think that was something that was like clouding people's opinion and judgment before, you know, this team reached this point. But on that last question, I mean, I've been a little resistant to the, okay, it's going to fall back a little bit here. Like it has to. Numbers would suggest that, you know, just reasonable thinking would suggest that. But now I'm not really waiting for it anymore. I think at least in the vacuum of this season, this looks like it's something that is going to last. And now I might reevaluate that in terms of next year and how you can continue to stack up seasons and games and this thought process and the way Rick Tocchet coaches this team. Like maybe there is a shelf life on that, but I am done waiting for this to change, right? Like I think they are who they are, and they're proving to be an elite team in the NHL, a veritable Stanley Cup contender, and a team that certainly can make a lot of noise in the Western Conference. I think teams, mainly in hockey, I think can like grab a wave, can catch a wave, right? And can really ride it for prolonged periods of time, even when there is some skepticism around it. And I don't know if this wave is going to last, you know, years, but I feel like this wave is going to last at least throughout the rest of the season. Don't know how far it's going to take them, but in terms of their regular season play, like, I'm just not at the point anymore where I'm expecting anything to really change.
Justin, looking to the Leafs game tomorrow, and I know they get the win in Calgary last night, but there are some recent concerns with their form and especially blowing leads once they get up in a game. And, you know, for so long now, the conversation with this Leafs team at this time of the year has been, hey, the regular season doesn't matter. Let's just see what you do in the playoffs, because it's been so consistently disappointing once they get there. But are there enough red flags at this point that you can't kind of skip ahead to the playoffs, right? And all of a sudden it actually does matter what you're doing in the regular season, because maybe the playoffs aren't the lock that that they sometimes are for this team.
Yeah, I definitely think it's worth being attentive to those red flags, right? Because this team, in order to reach some level of optimization, which does seem pretty impossible, to be honest, at least by the end of this season, or to get to the playoffs, you got to make moves. And in order for your general manager to be real confident in making those moves, they've got to see something from the group. And really, you mentioned, like, yeah, the regular season doesn't matter for this team. And unfortunately, that's kind of the thing that drags them down in a lot of ways, in my opinion. Like, the accountability on this team pretty clearly is lacking. I mean, we saw both coach and a star player this week talk about how, or just at least deflect and to put the attention on something else when this team hasn't played very well, has been giving up leads, and has been showing that they're not really ready to take that next step or to get the personnel in here to make to take that next step. I mean, a coach saying he doesn't rely on his players, or he doesn't know who to rely on 42 games in, I mean, that's a coach that's looking to make excuses to me rather than coach, you know, like the art of coaching, where Rick Tocchet has completely transformed this team in Vancouver. I mean, he's actively coaching. And what bothers me about Sheldon Keefe is that he brings in players that would be a quote unquote not Dubas guys, and he puts up his hands and makes excuses about it. And frankly, to me, that's frustrating and reason to maybe look elsewhere. But another reason is, you know, Mitch Marner has those same comments where he's trying to build up something else, like an outside force that's working against them, when really this team, at the end of the day, I think has to look inward. And when you're constantly convinced that there's another reason for your failures, that something else is contributing to those failures, I think you let your foot off the gas and you don't have the accountability needed to make required change. And I think that kind of goes into the coaching thing. Like, when you bring in a new coach, again, Rick Tocchet, everyone starts at zero. You have to earn the trust. You mm-hmm. have to learn a new structure, learn a new system, become trusted in the eyes of a new head coach. And Sheldon Keefe took over at a time when things were really bad and everyone felt so comfortable underneath that coach, playing for that coach. And that comfortability, I think, has gotten this team nowhere. And eventually, I think that has to change. I'm just not really convinced that they're going to make those changes before the end of the season or even this summer.
Justin, really appreciate the time as always. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the Canucks and the Leafs tomorrow night on Hockey Day in Canada.
Always fun. Cheers, boys.
That is Justin Cuthbert from the Fan 590 in Toronto, weighing in with some fairly harsh criticism as well of where the Leafs stand and the culture of accountability, as he was talking about with the Leafs right now.
Yeah, they played okay. I mean, they're like the lowest tier. When I talk about, like, it's wide open, right? Like, the Leafs for me are like Dallas. They're kind of like
I think Dallas is better than the Leafs. It's so hard to look at that blue line for me and see cup contender for the Leafs.
I mean, I think both teams are not real contenders. So.
Yeah, I know. I know you don't like Dallas, but I think Dallas is in a different tier than the Leafs. 6-5, we'll see. I mean, they lost to the Leafs in Toronto earlier in the year.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a huge gap between them, right? I mean, in terms of performance, like, I don't know. I'm just saying that for me, that's like not the inner circle. When I talk about the 12, that's like, you know, 10, 11, 12 in some order is like Dallas, Toronto, and I don't know, like maybe Pittsburgh, something like that. You know, it's just like whatever. To me, that's an order of magnitude lower than like the Rangers, the Panthers, the Avalanche, the Jets, honestly, the Canucks, the Bruins. How about Philly?
Not ready to go there.
I kind of am. That team's sick.
That's incredible.
That team's unbelievable.
They're playing really well. They're playing really, really well.
They're astonishingly good.
It's just
I honestly think there's almost no one if you were like a really good team and you got, well, certainly the Canucks, if you got into the playoffs and you look up and it's round one against Tortorella in Philadelphia, especially with Torts' history of like puncturing historically good teams in the first round.
No, that's a nightmare matchup. That's an absolute nightmare matchup.
At the very least, they're at that tier where no one wants to play them.
Yeah, they're 100% at that tier. No doubt about that.
Wouldn't you be more comfortable waking up if you were an Eastern Conference team and seeing the Leafs in round one than the Flyers?
Yeah, 100%. They're the Leafs.
Okay, well then, what are we talking about?
But that's like a round one thing. You know what I mean? Philly's losing in round two if they do pull off that upset in round one.
Maybe.
But, I mean, you could say the same thing for the Leafs, that they're losing in round two.
You could say that about any team if you want to be dismissive.
By the way, I did...
The Leafs defense, though, is like...
It's not good.
As much as Keefe, you know, isn't like my favorite coach by any means, and I think, you know, deserves the fair share of blame along with their best players for the club's constant, you know, habit of falling well short in the playoffs, like, that defense is a problem. And they committed $5.5 million to Bertuzzi, $3 million to Max Domi, $2.4 million over 4 years for David Kampf, and then, you know, the additional $4.15 million to John Klingberg and $1.3 million to Ryan Reeves. I mean, you contrast, like, that's more total cap space than it costs to bring in Cole, Soucy,
significantly more,
Suter and Bluger.
Yeah,
and like, you want to know the difference?
The returns aren't even close.
You want to know the difference between these two teams? It's like, just look at who spent more wisely in free agency.
Or even like Dakota Joshua at his number versus Ryan Reeves at his number.
That was a couple years ago.
No, it was, but still, you're still getting Dakota Joshua on that salary right now.
Totally.
And getting those contributions. Do you know what I mean?
Sick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great goal.
He's really, really good.
That was a sick play.
I just wanted to mention this quickly. Don Taylor is going to join us next. Couldn't make the crossover work this week, but Don Taylor graciously joining
us. Snow plus illness.
Snow plus illness. Lots of things going wrong this week for the crossover, but it'll be back next week. But good text came in from Brendan in the inbox, 650-650, building off your point about alignment and making this announcement now. He says, the thing I'm liking about the new Canucks is they make these moves early so that everyone is aligned and knows their role. Giving Quinn the C before camp / giving Rutherford a contract before a huge deadline and giving him security just helps eliminate distractions and keeps everyone focused on the task at hand.
I also think it puts the good sort of pressure on a team. Like, you know, I hadn't brought up the making Quinn Hughes captain thing, but it would have been very easy and no one would have criticized it or bat an eyelash if this team had said, we're not going to have a captain this season. We
100%.
Have four A's. This is our leadership group, right? And, you know, you even dangle the C with Pettersson and on, kind of what we were talking about, like, during the summer that might happen. I think to be decisive and to elevate Quinn the way they did, you know, guy's been reading.
What a quote from Connor Garland.
Unreal. But you know, I mean, there's a lot of photos like of Quinn Hughes boarding the flight, reading books about like sports leadership, right? Like, this has been something he's done. He's taken this to heart.
Yeah.
He's grown into the role. You know what? That's a really smart ad. I think that put the good sort of pressure on this core group. It gave them real ownership in some ways of this team's fortunes.
And you're right, empowering people to do the job and saying and giving them the vote of confidence. We believe in you. We're doing it at the right time. We're putting you in a position to succeed. Now go and show us that we're right. And he's done that.
It's a marginal difference, but this game is all about margins, right? This game is you're never more than about 60% likely to win a game, right? You're never going to outshoot a team by more than a 56% edge if you play for long enough, especially at this level, right? Like, those margins matter.
No doubt about it. Keep your texts coming in. As mentioned, Don Taylor, BC Sports Hall of Famer from Donnie and Dolly, will join us next. We'll get his thoughts on the Jim Rutherford extension coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650 Friday edition of the show. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? JanPro, the leader in commercial cleaning. Keep your workplace safe during this flu season by trusting JanPro's EnviroShield disinfection service. Visit janpro.ca. As mentioned, now joining us from Donnie and Dolly, regular contributor here on the station and on our show, although we couldn't do the crossover this week. He is the BC Sports Hall of Famer, Don Taylor. Donnie, thank you for doing this, man. How are you today?
No problem. No Dolly Wall today. He didn't want to come on twice.
Yes.
Because he was on the morning show today, and that's probably a good thing for you guys.
Yeah. I mean, it would have worked out, to be fair, because when he was on the morning show, we didn't know if Jim Rutherford had just signed a three-year extension. Yeah. So we do have some fresh meat to talk about and chew on here. What's your reaction to the news and also what we heard from Jim Rutherford and Francesco Aquilini at the press conference today?
It's just so hard to wrap your head around, guys. And I went a little talk show hosty today and talked about how, you know, Jim Rutherford's done a great job of building on the foundation that Jim Benning built. But in all seriousness, and you know, there's some...
Come on, you did not.
Yes, I did.
You kept
I
it did. To a thank you, Jim?
Well, I was thinking of you at all times, Thomas.
All right, wait, let's go around here. Let's go around here.
Sure. Well, okay, so
how much credit
say,
do you get for drafting in the top 10, man?
Well, he did a good job of getting in the top 10. How about that?
Look, no disagreement here.
The JT Miller trade. Yeah. The JT Miller trade. Home run.
A big win.
So I'll just say that. Okay.
Yeah. But let me ask you guys this. Part of it was tongue-in-cheek. I'm trying to get, like I say, I was being talk show hosty, trying to get things going, which you guys do all the time, and it's accepted in our industry.
No idea what you're doing.
Not by all the listeners and viewers, but you tell me this. Do you think Jim Rutherford would have come to Vancouver if he didn't believe in that foundation of those, let's go with the five players that are going to the All-Star game? All of whom were acquired by Jim Benning. There's got to be at least he's got to get some of the credit. I'm not saying all of the credit. He deserved to be let go. I get all that. But that foundation isn't bad. Unfortunately, he didn't do the job that Rutherford and Alvin have done of building around it, right?
I mean, Thomas, to say the
silent.
Least.
I just think,
you know, like, are we going to throw the Connor Garland trade in? Connor Garland's a big part of this team, acquired by Jim Benning. No, the fact is for me anyway, you know, Rutherford and Alvin may have inherited a talented core, but those pieces were not combining to win games, and they weren't combining to win games because every time they took a breather, this team was getting outscored by a massive amount. I mean, four new defensemen, right? Just a ton of bets that this group's had to place that have panned out for this team to level up. Backup goalie, exercising the largest buyout in franchise history to undo, or not franchise history, NHL history to undo a trade that was a disaster. I mean, you know, Jim Benning identified some talent, no question about it. I think there's no debate about that, but there's no question that he never could have gotten this done based on, you know, a large sample, like an 8-year sample of evidence.
You're right. And in all seriousness, I get where you're coming from. And most of the population, most of Canuck Nation are coming from. I think, guys, just with me, and he deserves this 3-year contract extension.
Yep.
It's just for a lot of us, especially those of us who've been around for a long time, and I go back to 1970 with this team as a fan, it just happened so quick.
Yeah.
I mean, when was Boudreaux let go? The 22nd of January? That was the 21st was the day that the tears were shed on the bench. And I don't mean to poke fun at anybody there. And the next day it was official, he was gone. So we're talking less than a year. It just happened so quickly. And let's not forget, last year didn't end great. You know, that even, you know, when Tocchet came in, there were signs that things were going to get better. Just that things have happened so quickly, old guys like me are going, what? Is this number one in the NHL? What are you talking about? This can't happen. So I think that a lot of it is that. It's just the disbelief that this has happened so quickly. and it really seems real. And to, you know what, Thomas, I think, I'm not sure who it was. It was Kevin Woodley who got this quote, but Tournier yesterday, head coach of the Coyotes, and this happened with DeBoer from your favorite team, the Dallas Stars. He went on record yesterday saying that's the best team we've played. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the best team we've played this year. They play with speed. They play with edge. And he was talking mostly about the first period, and he was just so impressed. And you just don't get that from opposition coaches. You certainly haven't got that a lot from opposition head coaches in Vancouver since 1970, but I think that says a lot. People are doing things and saying things about this team that you never saw before. So it's just your head spinning with how quickly it's happened.
So just on the Jim Benning point, Donnie, not to belabor it here, but since, you know, Francesco Accolini was dropping comparisons to 2010 and 2011, and I remember, and I'm sure you do as well, a lot of people during those days talking about Mike Gillis and saying, oh, yep, he inherited the Sedins and Luongo and Kessler and Bieksa and Edler, and that's fair. But then you look at the moves he made working under the salary cap to build out those teams around the edges, and Hamhuis and Malhotra and the Ehrhoff trade, right, finding those kind of unexpected values and how important that was. And I think there's a similar dynamic here. Yeah, of course it helps to have inherited Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and JT Miller, but the work he did just this summer bringing in these key contributors on cheap deals, that's the kind of thing you have to be able to do. And I, like, we never saw anything close to that type of efficiency from Jim Benning.
And I think that's the art of today's general manager in the National Hockey League. You know, I think a lot of general managers, and we've seen this here recently, they can manage to put together a team that will finish in the bottom 10 and draft high, and you'll probably get a pretty good player, but it's the what you do working around the edges. And, you know, Mike Gillis did a really good job of that. And, you know, one player nobody ever talks about from that era is Mikael Samuelsson. Mm-hmm. That was a great move by Mike Gillis back in the day. You mentioned Ehrhoff, which was brilliant, and, you know, what he gave up to get Ehrhoff for basically nothing. From the, they unloaded Patrick White. That helped them get Ehrhoff. That was a great move. So working arguably the worst pick in Canucks history, and I say that with love, Dave Notice and all that. But that's what Alvin and Rutherford have been able to do, is work around those edges really effectively and bolstering that core no matter who put it together. But I heard you guys talking earlier. We can say all we want about the player acquisitions, and they've been really, really strong. But Rick Tocchet is the key, and that's the best move that those two made.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if you were banging the table saying Burke and Nonis deserve credit in 2011, you probably should be giving Jim Benning credit now for consistency's sake. It's just I've never bought either argument. You know, that's kind of my view is. Cap era, it's so complicated. You should be judged on the team you put together, not the individual players acquired, especially when those players are typically acquired at the top of the draft.
No, I agree. And then, like I say, a lot of what I said today was tongue-in-cheek, and I wanted to get the boys upset at me. And, you know, it's doing my job to some extent.
Mix it
and,
up.
You know, a lot of it, too, is like, I mean, I covered as a reporter in the room Jim Benning is a player, so I always have been the nicest guy in the world. So
yeah,
you know,
fair enough.
I know you would agree with that, Thomas. Yep. But and that's the way he was as a player, not just as a GM. And so that plays into part of it. He did put together the foundation, or you know, like it might have been haphazardly, but he did. But it's building around the edges. It seems that those are the guys that have the success, and certainly it seems like Alvin and Rutherford are built that way as well, as well as Mike Gillis.
What do you think of the dynamic between owner and president today? Because, I sort of thought that there was a pretty stark distinction between Rutherford's cold realism and Francesco's sort of giddy, fan-facing excitement about where his team is at. And honestly, I thought that made him come off very well. The Canucks owner, as opposed to some of the, you know, more like executive speak polish that he's shown in availabilities in the past.
Yeah, too rehearsed in the past. You're right, Thomas. That's the best he's come across today. And you know, maybe it has to do with the situation his team's in. I just wish Rutherford would have advised Aquilini on how to button up a shirt properly as though it's not 1978. I don't know how many medallions I counted there, but
Donnie,
that.
Come on, we're all guys, right? Like at the age of 25, we pick a style, a favorite type of music. Right?
Yeah.
Our friends, and we never change from where we're at 25. Like, that's the rule. And so, you know, Francesco was roughly 25 in the 70s. Makes sense to me.
Okay. All right. I'll give him that. I know he grew up approximately where I did, so there were a lot of people dressing that way back in the day. I get that. But you know what really came across is, like, I think because Jim Rutherford signed a 3-year extension, he went out of his way to thank Francesco and the family, and I get it. It's about money. My guess is Jim Rutherford is fairly well off, and he's what, 74 years old? I don't think he needs this. Mm. So what came across for me today is that all that talk about Francesco Aquilini meddling, I didn't get any sense of that today at all, and I don't think Jim Rutherford would hang around. He'd be like, screw this. I don't need this. And maybe Francesco, that's where the giddiness comes in. Maybe he's seen the light and realizes that this is the way to go, and let an old salty dog like Jim Rutherford, who has a great resume, let him run the ship. And hey, guess what? Things are really, really working out. So there was a lot of positivity today, as you'd expect by just looking at the standings.
Yeah, the only hint of meddling we got today was the idea of meddling with a charcuterie board.
Yeah, and you don't want to do that. I like my charcuterie board. Don't meddle with those things.
Nothing like a good charcuterie board, man.
Oh, man, if you put a charcuterie board in front of me, I will meddle, let me tell you.
Oh, well, here's my take on charcuterie board. Speaking of growing up in the 70s and 80s, back in the day, my mom and dad would have people over. They'd slice Ukrainian sausage, cheddar cheese, and some premium plus crackers on a plate, and people loved it.
Yeah.
Now you put those same things on a piece of wood, and it costs $55. What happened?
Hey, you know, Donnie, all this time I've thought the crossover was unhinged because of me and Rick, but now I realize you might be the instigator.
This is elite content right here.
I feed Rick all his lines.
Yeah.
I did laugh when you said you were trotting out the Jim Benning takes to get the boys on your show fired up, as if it takes a lot to get Dollywall fired up.
That's true. Yeah, well, that's what happens when he actually listens. He gets fired up.
Okay, so lots of other tidbits here to dig into from what we heard from Jim Rutherford and Francesco Aquilini. And I got to say, from our perspective in the media, you know, one of the best things about Jim Rutherford signing this 3-year extension is he shoots from the hip and he lets you know what he's thinking. And did it catch your attention as well when he said that, you know, he has a lot of confidence that Andriy Kuzmenko is going to score goals, whether it's here in Vancouver or another NHL city at some point?
Yeah. Well, it caught my attention when he said he's going to score a lot of goals in Vancouver, but that was enough, because it's clearly, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. But when he mentioned another city, it was like, was that another whoops by Jim Rutherford? Because you know what it's like. We're gonna take that and run with it, as though you know he's gonna be out of town tomorrow. I think Jim Rutherford was honest to a fault when he first joined the Canucks organization, and we got a little hint of that with that quote today. It was something we're all gonna use for a long, long time. But yeah, interesting. I said this a long time ago, when Alex Edler was having his problems with the Canucks, where he was getting booed, and I mean, Quinn Hughes fans will have something to say about this, and I agree with them, but, you know, he's going to go into the Ring of Honor, and he managed to turn his game around. But there was a time where, I swear to God, every time he got the puck, you could see the gears turning on the side of his helmet, like he was thinking way too much. And I get that sense with Andriy Kuzmenko. Unlike Edler, though, I don't think Kuzmenko's going to stick around all that long. And you look at his contract, you can say that very easily. I just think he's overthinking the game. And I don't know if he's not respecting Rick Tocchet, but it just does not look right now. And maybe the only thing that doesn't look right, and if people think he's being treated unfairly, I refer back to somebody you were talking about 10, 12 minutes ago, and that's Dakota Joshua, who was definitely really in the doghouse at the beginning of the year because of conditioning, whatever the reason was. He clearly wasn't a favorite of Rick Tocchet, and he's managed to listen and learn and turn his game around. He's got a career-high 12 goals, so that tough love can work. It worked with Dakota Joshua. So anybody who thinks Kuzmenko's being unfairly picked on might want to look at big number 81 and see that that sort of approach can really work.
What did you make of Rutherford's commentary regarding Elias Pettersson and Francesco jumping in to, you know, assure the fans from an ownership perspective that they would love to have that deal done quickly?
Well, I got to believe what they're saying, just looking at, you know, what Pettersson has been up to pretty much all this season. I think they definitely want to see him sign, and will see anything that makes him sign sooner than later. Because, guys, if he has another 100-plus point season and they go deep in the playoffs, and I think that's what Elias is banking on, and his agent, J.P. Barry, I think that's what they're banking on. Lord knows what he can command at that point. So, yeah, I'm sure the Canucks will say whatever they can to get his name on the dotted line sooner rather than later. Because if things end up the way we think they're going to end up, given the way they've started the season or the way they've played this season, that's going to be very, very expensive.
And, you know, our media colleague Farhan Lalji, who, by the way, was mostly responsible for the negative opinion of Edler in this market.
He'll play Farhan, yes.
He'll love that if he's listening. Says, brought up Pettersson's contract to the player. Wait until the end of the year was the response per his Twitter feed. What's your reaction to that? Are you worried at all? Are you getting worried at this point, Donnie?
Well, sorry, I lost you for a second there. Give me the question again. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, Pettersson asked about the contract status per Farhan Lalji. Wait until the end of the year is the player's response. Are you getting nervous at this point about the Pettersson situation, Donnie?
He is such a hard read, isn't he? Like, I have no, he would make just a tremendous negotiator.
Infinite jest. Hard read.
There's just zero indication as to, even with the boat interview in Stockholm. That's as animated as we saw him, and in the, you know, scale of animation, I don't know, that was at a 3 out of 10 versus the rest of the human race. Like, it's just such a hard read. I don't know, but yeah, if I'm a Canuck fan, I would be worried, just given that he's so emotionless. When you just think that maybe he's got no emotions when it comes to the city of Vancouver and could care less about it. That's the way it comes across. But guys, let's talk about on the ice, what he's doing from a personal point of view, being able to play some great players around his age. I think he wants to see this thing through. And where's he going to go, you know, especially the way things have gone this season, and he's a major reason why it's gone that way, but is he sure that he's going to go somewhere where it's going to be as good or better? And I got to think that's part of what he's thinking. I mean, maybe it takes a left turn somewhere down the road here. I'm not sure. But I think that's what should give Canuck fans some confidence, as scared as they might be feeling right now. Is that is he sure he's going to go to a better situation somewhere else? I can't believe the answer would be yes. So there's some confidence for Canuck fans there.
Donnie, this was fantastic. Thank you for making time for us. We'll get back to the crossover with you and Dhaliwal next week.
Don't forget Dhaliwal. Don't worry about it. We don't need him.
Look, I'm not going to lie. This was a lot of fun. This was really good. I'm going to have to stop and pick up some salami
and sausage. Yeah.
Some salami and salted tops on the way home.
Kielbasa and Ritz crackers.
Hey, listen, I got to speak to my heritage. I said Ukrainian sausage. None of this salami. Ukrainian sausage, cheddar cheese, premium plus salted tops. There you go. On an old school plate.
How does Ukrainian sausage differ from what I'd call kielbasa, Donnie?
No, it's the same thing.
Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah.
All right.
I'm just, my heritage is Polish, so.
The Don Taylor charcuterie board right there.
I still go like pre-order and get an order of kielbasa from Oyama. Yeah. Before Christmas every year, no matter what. And then I put it out and all my family's vegetarian and no one eats it except me.
I forgot Bix pickles too. Very old school.
Oh, let's go. A little bit of mustard.
Some French's mustard on the side. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I, Dude, if anyone rolled that out for me at a job interview, I'd hire them on the spot.
Oh. Yeah. Smash it. All right. Donnie, we appreciate it, man. Have a great weekend.
Anytime, guys.
That is Don Taylor from Donnie and Dolly, and of course, BC Sports Hall of Famer. And what a hit. What a hit from Donnie.
One of the best hits we've ever done. And by the way, I credit Jim Benning.
Yeah, really. I was like, this is not where I expected this to go right off the bat.
Well, and I was
relitigating
like,
the Jim Benning legacy.
I might as well have just like snapped all my knuckles. I was like, oh, really? Donnie, you chose violence.
Is that where
today.
We're going? Huh? Is that where we're going? It's funny because at least in the Gillis example, and I think Gillis deserves a ton of credit for putting those teams together, but it's not as if the team was a disaster before he arrived, right? Like, that's what this team was before Jim Rutherford arrived.
Yeah.
There were, as you said, there were major questions about can this core of players be good together?
Yeah.
Those questions didn't exist about the Sedins and Luongo.
Well, they didn't.
Now, they're up the upside of the Sedins, but it was a completely different, like, that team had been to the playoffs. Now,
one of the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Still. I mean, it was a completely different situation, I think.
I agree with you. But I still think I agree with you, but I think you're overselling like one thing.
How good that team was.
One thing that's been said about the like credit, how much credit does the Gillis regime get is like that team's rise was inevitable and it wasn't. No more than this team's was.
No, I'm not saying it was inevitable, yeah. But you're starting from a stronger position, I think. If not in terms of raw talent, then at least in what there was with the players that were already under contract.
I agree with you that they were starting from a stronger position, but I'd add this, they were starting from a stronger position in terms of the team's quality, but also dealing with a shorter window because of the age of most of those team's best players. So it's kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, and that's right. And at any rate,
like in some ways, what Rutherford took over was higher upside.
I can see that argument because of Pedersen and Hughes and the age of them, for sure. It's still different than when you have like almost no track record of having successful seasons together as a team, right?
For sure.
I will say though, in general, whether you're talking about Rutherford taking over and inheriting, you know, Pedersen and Hughes, et cetera, whether you're talking about Gillis, especially in the salary cap era, don't discount being able to fill out a team around the margins and raise the ceiling of the team. Like, that's a really, really hard skill. Just because you're not adding the all-star piece or, you know, the first-line center to the team, the idea that, therefore, you don't really deserve credit for it, it's like, no, we've seen how hard it is, not just here at Vancouver, we were talking about the Leafs, how hard it is to find those quality complementary players. That's really, really difficult to do. That's a major skill. Like, saying that's what a GM is doing and that's his major contribution, that's not a slight to the GM or the executive. That's hard to do, and it's an incredibly important skill.
It's, in fact, the single most important thing if you're going to win in this era of the NHL. By the way, charcuterie boards are just Lunchables for grown-ups, suggests Colin from the Caribou, who then adds, now I'm craving a Lunchables board.
I got halfway through, and I was like, is that supposed to make me not like them? Because you're doing a terrible job of convincing me not to eat a charcuterie board. This one says, let's hear some more Canucks media charcuterie boards, please. I was going to say, like, if we published a Canucks media cookbook, we know what Donnie's entry would be. The Don Taylor charcuterie board.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and, like, you know that my charcuterie board would be, like, all bitter flavors. And everything would be, like, high-end to a point that it's, like, you know, inaccessible. Yeah.
Yeah, that's off-putting and unpleasant.
It's like, it's either too spicy to eat or too salty. Kids would hate it.
All right, we will take a break, possibly talk more about charcuterie boards.
Too
Who
spicy.
Can say? Too spicy. I hear that a lot.
I know.
Yeah, from my kids.
I tell my niece and nephew that whenever I'm eating something I don't want to share.
You know, it's good. It's a good one. Yeah. It's a good tactic.
It's too spicy.
We're training my five-year-old, like, gradually introducing spice to her, and it's working. I got to say, she's taking some steps forward, so that's exciting to see. We might talk more charcuterie board, but there are some good texts and questions coming in about the dynamic now with Jim Rutherford signing the extension and whether it changes things with Elias Pettersson, how much, how it might change things. So I want to dive into that side of things. We'll get to some of the odds and ends we haven't hit from the Jim Rutherford and Francesco Aquilini presser as well. JanPro, the leader in commercial cleaning, keep your workplace safe during this flu season by trusting JanPro's EnviroShield disinfection service. Visit janpro.ca. Final segment of Canucks Talk up next here, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Happy Friday afternoon to everyone. Final segment of the show here today. We are live from the Kintec Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Lots of people asking about a draft today, and I should note, Dimitri not on the show. Of course, this is his normal time slot. I believe he's a little under the weather, so no Dimitri
too bad.
Today. It is too bad.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, of course it's too bad that our good pal is sick, but it's too bad because drafting a charcuterie board is such a layup.
I know, right? And people are texting in. It's like, oh, great, you guys found the draft. It's like, wow, that would have been good. Would have been perfect, but unfortunately no Dimitri today. It's always sad for me because obviously love chatting with Dim, but I do have like a Pavlovian reaction to sitting down with him because it means we're only half an hour away from the weekend. So I like, of course I like Dimitri anyways, but I'm like always extra excited to see him on our show because it reminds me that it's the weekend. So tough break for me in particular. By the way, somebody texted it in. Not sure you caught this. I did catch this. He says, not sure you caught this, but Shorty told the world he'd made you cookies on the broadcast last night. Also, he called your show the Canucks Hour, which seemed like a slight. I don't think that was an intentional slight from
Shorty.
That's
what we used to be called.
It used to be in the first year of the show. It was only an hour long, so it was Canucks Hour. So Shorty just showing that he's an OG day one listener.
100%. 100%.
But I did pick that up, yes, that he got the name of the show wrong.
Yeah, also... So before I was sick, right? Before I was out sick.
Oh, yeah.
I was supposed to grab the cookies originally from Shorty at the rink.
At the rink, yeah.
And bring them to the studio for both of us to enjoy. I didn't get to enjoy one, by the way. You didn't save me any, did you?
No, I did. They're just at my house. I meant to bring them today. Sorry.
That's useless.
I meant to bring the tin back today, but I did not. Sorry. I forgot.
That's fine. You can just...
It's on me.
You just give me your address. I'll show up. So, you know, when I'm out sick, right, it's a lot, right? Like, especially on a Thursday where we have crossover, it's like, I let Dolly know, I let my editors at The Athletic know, I had to put in a formal request and on, then I let you know, then I call Canberra.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I literally have to call in sick to two jobs and say, like, hey, sorry, can we reschedule to a variety of commitments? So I make all these phone calls, and I forget to tell Shorty. And Shorty calls me, and he's like, I'm on my way to the rink. Are you going to be there? And I'm like, oh, man, you're the only person I forgot to tell. And then he was like, fine, I'll go to the studio.
And I got to say, Shorty, dedication to getting those cookies to us, driving to the studio after his stop at the rink. So shout out to John Shorty.
And
what a beauty.
During the game.
I was going to say, yeah, and he mentioned it during the game as well. So he wanted the world to know. And no, why not? They were delicious cookies as well, I have to say. All right, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And some of these texts came in early on in the show when we were really breaking down the Jim Rutherford extension and some of his comments from the press conference at Rogers Arena today. This one from Ian in Coquitlam. Question, are you surprised that Rutherford's extension got done before Pettersson's? Does this make re-signing PD easier? Another one comes in from Whopperman, the X-ray guy, who says, do you think that Petey might have been waiting for some front office stability? And that question in general, right, taking kind of all of those points and questions as one, is how does this change the dynamic, if at all? Now, I will say...
You're going to drive yourself crazy trying to figure this out.
The first question from Ian Coquitlam, who says, are you surprised that Rutherford's extension got done before Pettersson's? As of, like, today, no. Coming into the season, I would have been surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
The volume of winning and the volume of good stuff outweighed that. But if you had told me in September, I would have said, well, I would expect it to go Pettersson signs, then the front office resigns.
For me, the test was never playoffs or anything like this. I wrote this in the summer. Like, in August, I had this column. The test of this season for Canucks management wasn't, to me, about being first in the NHL by total points 42 games in. It wasn't about making the playoffs. It certainly wasn't about winning the division or home ice advantage because I didn't imagine those as realistic possibilities. Excuse me. The thing that it was about was, at the end of the year, could we see a path to this team actually contending, right? Not only can we see that path, we kind of see it now.
Yeah, no, it's here.
Yeah. And honestly, given that I think the Pettersson deal is the most important piece of business for this franchise, and have been saying that for what? I mean, 12 months at least.
Mm-hmm.
Dating, like, well before the summer, we were talking about, you know, the Pettersson deal's everything. This is the highest priority topic for the team this offseason. You know, I think I wrote like a Canucks checklist for the offseason. It was number one. You know, if the results weren't this spectacular, I think it could be a talking point. But you know, what this team has accomplished over the course of this year and the decisions that they've made to get there, I think put you in a spot where, regardless of how the Pettersson thing plays out, you know, you'd feel more comfortable with this guy at the helm of what comes next than anyone else.
And somebody texted in fact, right before we got on air, signing Rutherford to an extension is more important to me than signing EP40. At least he will not panic and do the right thing if EP40 decides to walk. And it's an interesting point. I don't know if I would say more important, but, you know, we were talking about how crucial it is to have that alignment and have all the incentives lined up in the right way going into the trade deadline. And I think that's especially, it's even more true when you're dealing with a really high stakes situation and kind of one with a lot of murkiness and uncertainty, like the Elias Pettersson thing, right? You don't want there to be any questions whatsoever about who's going to be in charge or what their job security is. You want Jim Rutherford to be free to focus in on the dynamics of that scenario. So whether it's, you know, because you would want him to be in charge even if Pettersson leaves or whatever, but I think you put yourself in a much better position to negotiate and deal with however the Pettersson situation plays out now that you have Jim Rutherford signed to an extension, right? Like, that strengthens your hand, both in terms of trying to keep Pettersson, I think, but also just dealing with whatever happens in some pretty complex and pretty interesting negotiations between the player and the team.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is it has no impact. My guess is it has no impact. Today's news does.
Yeah, I certainly don't think it was like Elias Pettersson, like, oh, let's see if Jim Rutherford and Patrick Ovechkin are going to be here. Then I'll make my decision.
Yeah, the thing to note, too, is like, not that general managers and star players don't have a relationship, but it's not a day-to-day relationship. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
The GM or the president goes on some trips, but not all of them. You come in the morning, and if you're talking to your general manager beyond small talk, you know, at the team buffet, there's a problem, typically. You know, like, it's a head coach in an NHL environment's like a metronome. Like, the day-to-day schedule is set by them. They're like, duk, duk, duk. They set the tone and the rhythm. And the coach of the team has a huge impact on what life is like for players and support staff. Who the GM is only occasionally. Like, you know, they make decisions, they inform your agent about news,
mm-hmm.
They might cut you, they might trade you. You definitely are doing a deal with them, but it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more removed. Not that this has no impact, but I'd be surprised if it was like a factor, frankly, in any way.
I think it strengthens the team's position, right? It gives them the confidence to navigate the situation more than it increases the likelihood one way or another of Elias Pettersson resigning. At least that would be my read, right? It's just, hey, we're all aligned here. At least we're not trying to deal with that while also trying to figure out who's going to be running hockey ops. Like, that is a really nightmare situation. And by getting this extension done, they avoid that from playing out. One other thing I did want to bring up and just throw by you quickly was the repeated subject. It comes up, you know, every time pretty much Jim Rutherford talks to the media, and this time Francesco Accolini was asked about it as well, the practice rink, practice facility topic. And, you know, I believe the quote from Francesco Accolini, we've got a few practice facility sites identified. We're making a lot of good progress, just a matter of time. But he also says, look, it's going to take time, but we're going to get there. Did this answer, update, whatever, feel in any way different from some of the other ones that we've gotten over, you know, the last couple of years with Jim Rutherford here?
I mean, I don't know. It's such a complicated one. The team needs to figure out so many different things. They've missed so many opportunities to do smart stuff in and around the arena. Land is at such a premium.
Mm-hmm.
Dating back to the team telling Chris Tanev during his recruitment, right, that they'd have a practice facility, it's hard for me to get too excited about any update, non-update.
Well, like, I said, before you joined the show, I said, like,
I'll believe it when I see it. And that sounds as if I think it's never going to happen, which is not what I mean, but it's just until there's like,
we need to see it
until there's plans on a placard at the conference. You know what I mean? And this is the plot of land and we've signed the agreement. It feels like it's just still kind of up in the air.
I moved to Vancouver in 2019 after leaving Florida, September 2019. Okay. 3 weeks ago, the Florida Panthers held their first practice at the new facility at the War Memorial. The War Memorial was a project I worked on with like lobbyists and like announcements and stuff. Like, we announced that plan when I was there. It was one of my big projects in my final 6 months there. Was like, we're, you know, working with the city council and, you know, getting all the renderings out to media and stuff. Like, that was a project that I shepherded. And it just held its first NHL practice 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Like, just to give you a sense, like, we're not even at the point of rendering. We're not even at the point of a locate. I mean, we are years away.
Yeah, forget shovels in the ground. You know what I mean? This is
years.
Like deciding on the location still.
So, you know, I just bring that up as like context for people who may not have a good sense of the scale of the project and the timeline in question. I'm glad it's on the radar, but we are years away from this impacting life for the Canucks.
I will also say, although I do think even you're right that we're years away from it impacting the day-to-day life, but getting an agreement would be huge.
Huge.
And getting that process, getting that ball rolling would be massive.
And having an agreement on something that's actually workable, right? Like,
yeah.
You want to be close to the game rink and or the airport. That's tough. That like strip of Cambie, basically, right? Between like Cambie and Granville. You know, stretching from the bridges right down to the airport, like that's pricey. There's not a lot of space you can
not
think
a lot of.
Of
empty tracts of land along that corridor.
And if there are, they're extremely prohibitive in terms of cost. I mean, it's a hugely complicated effort. We'll see.
By the way, I should point out Farhan Lalji tweeting earlier in the day says Rutherford tells me an extension on Alvin is close at hand, should happen within the next week. Also says they are close to an agreement on a location for a new practice facility. So a little extra detail there from Farhan on the practice facility. And no surprise, I mean, I was wondering even when this was announced today, the press conference, if it would be extensions for Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin at the same time announced, but no surprise, obviously, with Rutherford hiring Alvin and the working relationship they have going back to Pittsburgh, that one of Rutherford's first orders of business with a new contract in hand would be to do the same for Patrick Alvin. So stay tuned for that announcement, maybe sometime next week, according to Farhan Lalji. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and this one comes in, and of course we've been talking about it a lot, and now with the extension in hand, with the team continuing to win, with Elliot Friedman reporting this team believes they can win, you know, the commentary we heard from the owner, all of it, we're just going to keep talking about them making a big move at the deadline. This text comes in: Jamie, is there a bridge too far when it comes to buying this year, or are you thinking they should be in on the bidding wars, emptying the chambers, whatever it takes to find an upgrade here or there?
There's a bridge too far.
Of course there is.
Here's what I'd say, man.
But what I'll say is this: the idea that the bridge too far, I don't look at it as Willander or Lekkerimäki is a bridge too far.
No.
Because you can't make that decision without knowing what the return is.
Correct.
So don't do that just for the sake of getting a marginal upgrade on your third pair. Of course not, right? You gotta have some sense there. But if the type of player who's worth, who would demand a return like that is available, then I don't think it is a bridge too far.
This is where we bump into problems, right? Like, if you're telling me it's Lindholm or Gensel, like, good. Those are top of the lineup pieces. Those aren't star players. Not like superstar players.
No.
You know?
I think they're stars. They're not superstars.
Are they?
Yes. Jake Gensel's like a multiple-time 40-goal scorer.
Okay. Has he ever been the best player on his line?
No, but he also plays with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny
Malkin. Sure, but I'm just saying, like, no NHL team has ever put on their marquee Gensel versus Lindholm. I'm just saying, like, you know, we're talking about Rutherford's MO. Well, Phil Kessel was a marquee name.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Weight was a marquee name. I mean, his biggest acquisitions were for leading to Stanley Cup wins were for a player of a caliber that's different than this. Fair or not fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
Like, you know, Lindholm's, I love Lindholm as a two-way player, right? He scored 40 goals a couple years ago when he was the center on a line with Tkachuk and Gaudreau. That was one of the best lines we've seen in the last 6 years. Like, top five line of the last 6 years, that line in that 21-22 season was spectacular. He has 8 goals this year.
Oh, yeah, he's declined. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I mean, it's not
he's not
fault.
Playing with Tkachuk and Gaudreau.
I don't think it's his fault. I think he's still playing well, but, you know, and he's sick in the bumper. I mean, that's, like, you want a guy made to play the bumper as a righty. And, you know, Besser's done a fantastic job, but Besser's so versatile, he can play anywhere. That's what's made him so important to this power play. You know, I think he's a great player. I think he'd be a great fit. I don't know if the piece to justify a Vilander or Lakarimäki type deal is out there. Like, I don't know that player is available, and I think if they are, you know, then there's no price that I think you take off the table. But I don't think you want to trade Lakarimäki, your version of Owen Tippett, for aging guy.
Yeah, for a rental.
Yeah.
And because here's the thing. I really like Lindholm. I think he would be a fantastic fit. I also do not want to sign him to his next contract. And I don't even mean like, oh, because of the Canucks salary cap situation, I don't think his next contract is going to age well. Given the market for centers, given, you know, the where his play is at right now, all of those things, his age, I love him as a rental. I don't want to sign that next deal, right? So if you're going out and acquiring him, you have to look at it, I think, as a pure rental, and that has to affect the price that you're willing to pay as well. I do think it's worth pointing out here, and I know Rick Dhaliwal was on with Halford and Brough earlier today and talking about, you know, the names and the targets and all of those things. And one of the points that Rick Dhaliwal made was, you know, what do we do when we try to think of guys who could be available at the deadline, right? You go look at the teams outside of the playoff race, or at the very least kind of hanging on to the fringes of the playoff race, and you look at their UFAs, maybe guys with 1 year left after this one, and you say, okay, of these guys, who's going to be available, right? And that's how we end up with, you know, Lindholm and Tanev from the Flames. You know, Jake Gensel's a pending UFA. Rick Dhaliwal made the point that those aren't actually the only deals you can make, right? You can go after guys with term, maybe guys even from good teams that don't think they're going to be an all-in team this year. They might become available. And, you know, when the Canucks made the Philip Ronick deal, that wasn't a name that was on our radar. Now, it's a very, very different situation, obviously, right, with a team that's trying to go on a cup run this year. But I do think it's worth just thinking about, we can kind of broaden our horizons a little bit in terms of who might be available, in terms of who the Canucks might be targeting. Because, you know, your point about the desire to add a star for Jim Rutherford, like, I don't think he's going to be limited to, well, there's no pending UFAs from bad teams that I really like. Like, I'm sure he's going to turn over a lot more rocks than that,
yeah,
trying to find that star player.
Well, and that's why, like, something like Mittelstadt to me is interesting.
Yes.
Right? Who team's going to sell. They've invested a lot into a bunch of young players. He's played well as like a complimentary piece, you know, for this Sabres team. Maybe the Canucks don't think they can get more out of him in a more structured environment, but, you know, he's also fits that mold of maybe his value is a little lower than it might be because he's arbitration eligible.
Yep.
And we've seen that this team's not scared of that.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're looking at maybe a longer term fit if it works. To me, that's the sort of deal that I'd be more interested in seeing this team chase. By a lot. And I think if there was the right type of guy who shakes loose, and it could be Gensel. Like, Gensel's not the sort of guy that I think is, like, a bad bet by any means. I want to be so, so clear about that. Because I think, you know, absolute playoff warrior. But more in the Mark Recchi mold,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, more the second, you know. I just think if you're getting a piece like that, you absolutely cannot be giving up a Vilander or a Lakarimäki, to me.
For a non-star rental. For a non, like, superstar rental.
Correct.
I get that. That's fair. Now, yeah, I don't think I was going to say, would I be tempted in Lindholm's case, but I don't think I even would, because
no.
It would be a pure rental. As much as I think Lindholm would be a phenomenal, phenomenal fit for this team, especially with the Lotto line together, and you slot him in on that second line,
like with his two-way ability, I think that is an ideal fit. As you said, the power play utility as well. I still can't quite get there as a pure rental giving up that kind of cost.
If Tampa Bay decided to sell, okay, Tampa Bay decides to sell, and they make Anthony Cirelli available.
Let's go. Now that's then you start emptying the chamber. Then you start throwing everything in for a guy who's that good and fits that well with what this team needs in that second line center spot.
What about Seattle? Yan Gourde.
Yan Gourde doesn't rise to that level where
this year and next.
Yeah, I don't think you do Karamaki or Verlander for that. I like Yan Gourde, but what is he? He's 32.
He's a top line caliber player. He is sick, man.
Is he better than Elias Lindholm?
He's different.
He's different.
I think he impacts the game. I think he impacts the game more 5-on-5. I think he's going to produce a lot less, but that's okay if you're the Canucks.
That's a tough one.
Right. They're all going to be tough ones. I'm not asking you easy ones. That would be bad radio.
Just feeding me layups.
Joel Eriksson-Ek.
Oh, come on. You get like that. That is the guy that you go all out for. I don't think he's going to be available.
No, me neither.
But if he is, if there's any glimmer of hope that he's out there, I mean, I don't think you can find. Because what I've been thinking, I think I've said this before, is what you really want to do is like the JT Miller trade again, but in season. You know what I mean? Find the guy under contract on the reasonable number. JT was 25 when they traded for him. Positional versatility, all of those things. Like, Joel Eriksson-Ek comes the closest to checking all of those boxes out there.
All right, ready? Here's a tough one.
All right, let's do it.
Evgeny Kuznetsov.
No, zero. What are we talking about?
But you're giving up Kuzmenko, and they're retaining, so it's cap neutral this year and next.
If those are the only pieces you trade?
Oh, no, no. You're obviously also giving a first.
Kuznetsov is washed, isn't he?
Yeah, pretty much.
He's completely washed.
But, I mean, maybe, you know.
but what this question presupposes is maybe he isn't? It's like, no,
well,
he is.
Just like, I don't know. Washington's so weird, you know, like.
I think that's like the exact opposite archetype
of what
they should be going for. You know what I mean? Like aging guy who's made his bones on offense but is not really good offensively anymore. It's like, no, thank you. Not interested.
Fair.
All right. We will wrap it up for the weekend. Thanks for texting in. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the Leafs and the Canucks tomorrow on Hockey Day in Canada. We are back on Monday for more. You've got it right here on Sportsnet 650.